Session number 9708, Reel 4.
Subordinate level, Reel 4.
I'm talking about the meeting in the War Cabinet offices, where the Deputy Chief of Air Staff eventually agreed to Sless's demand that 30 of our 3-centimetre ACS squadrons should be diverted from Bomber Command to the Anti-Submarine Role in Coastal Command. Well, I was at the end of the table, and the serried ranks of Coastal Command were down one side with their CNC Slessor on the other side with the Bomber Command people, but not the CNC Harris, only his Deputy Slessor. Only as Deputy Saunby. And Saunby said Bottomley, who I think it was Bottomley, who was the Deputy Chief of Air Staff, he said, "Sir, I must report to my CNC, whom I know will be severely displeased." I got in my car and drove back to TRE in Malvern, and I was met at the gate by either by Rowe or Lewis, and he said to me, "Well, you haven't done very well, Lovell. What have you been doing this afternoon?" So I said, "We've done very well indeed. We've got authority to divert 30 of the H2S equipments to Coast Command." He said, "You have not." He said, "Since you left the meeting, Harris has phoned up Churchill and got the decision reversed." I mean, antagonisms, you see, between the commands. It's quite extraordinary. Well, I think we reached some compromise after that. Well, I think I've really almost finished my story about H2S. It's just one or two things I ought to end by. I mean, this use of our H2S equipment, converted H2S to deal with U-boat warfare, I think was one of the high spots of my association with this device. I'd just like to say, by the autumn of 1944, every heavy bomber coming off the production line was fitted with 10-centimetre H2S, and there were nearly 300 3-centimetre equipments in the Pathfinder force. 95% of the strategic bombing effort depended on the navigation and bombing facilities of H2S. Of course, by that time we'd made many improvements, stabilization of the scanner against roll of the aircraft. And towards the end of the war, we had systems of much greater definition, some using a 6-foot scanner instead of the 3-foot scanner. And also, I think I've mentioned working on 1.25 centimeters. I'd just like to return a year or so into the war, when we were still on the Dorset coast. You remember, we had been evacuated to Leesum House, which is halfway down the hill into Swanage, and I had set up my prototype centimetre equipment looking over Swanage Bay. And this was in the year before Rowe had summoned me and put me in charge of H2S, so we're talking about 1941. When the naval people heard about our H2S, they came over and we put a trailer on Peveril Point and arranged to make tests on naval craft in Swanage Bay. They were extraordinarily successful, and a group came over from Signal School to make a prototype. We did the test on HMS Titlark and the submarine, and these were so good that centimetre techniques were soon under development in the naval establishment. So it was our initial centimetre equipment in TRE during the Swanage area that finally injected it into the naval establishment. And there is one. Could you just cut a moment? I want to find. Just one more comment on back into the war again. In the spring of 1943, when the production line of H2S for the main bomber force had commenced, we no longer depended on the small number which we were more or less making in the crash program ourselves with the EMI's help. And this possibility, the availability of considerable numbers of centimetre equipment, had other interesting consequences. On the 21st of March 1943, I received two visitors from Combined Operations who were inquired into the possibility of modifying H2S for navigating and ranging on tank landing craft. And on the 19th of April, I was asked to modify an equipment for demonstration. We did this, and 3 weeks later, on the 9th of May, we sailed from Portsmouth in the landing craft LCT-162, which we'd fitted with the modified H2S with a scanner and a Perspex housing 36 foot above sea level. The two naval people there were Commander Paul and Lieutenant Short of Combined Operations. And it was a Sunday afternoon. It was an absolutely marvellous day. They could see the coastline at ranges of 10 to 15 miles and the Nab Tower at 5.5 miles. A few days later, the Chief of Combined Operations sailed in the ship, and we were engaged in modifying 20. On July the 10th, these were used in the invasion of Sicily. And then we handed over the large fitting program to the Admiralty. A brief and pleasant interview. I think I've really finished.
Just before we finish completely, could I just ask you one thing about Tizard? And do you have any personal memories of him as a man?
I do indeed. Oh, I didn't mean to say we'd finished our conversations. I meant I'd finished my personal story of the war. Tizard was... I have written a lot about Tizard in a study I'm doing for Sloan Foundation. I first encountered Tizard when I was a young demonstrator in the 1930s at the University of Bristol. I was studying, doing research for my PhD, and Tizard sent one of his sons, because he liked Bristol University and the way the river came up, and that was my first encounter with Tizard, and he happened to come into the lab when I was demonstrating to his son or talking to his son about an experiment he was doing on a conical pendulum. And from that day, Tizard did everything he possibly could to help me. Both during the war, he used to come down and cheer me up, and it was he, before he lost too much power against Churchill, against Charwell, who eased the situation of Hodgkin and myself on the research thing. But my most important memories of Tizard, apart from those early contacts, are after the war. Because, and I've only just discovered this, I'm rewriting again the whole story of the initial stages of Jodrell Bank. I think I mentioned that I came here with two army traders to investigate cosmic ray showers, and never did that observation because we ran into all these other exciting things of meteors and on. I first of all built a 218-foot wire paraboloid over there, and then in 1948-49 put forward a proposal for this, what is now you see out of the window. Tizard was then, he had been restored to favor. He was chairman of the Defense Research Policy Committee and of the Advisory Council on Scientific Research. A very, very powerful individual. I mean, he, as soon as Churchill and Charwell had disappeared, the Tizard Blackett bandwagon really got going. And in that phase, Tizard became one of the primary responsible persons for making this telescope possible. He, and of course, Blackett was great friends. He frequently came here, and Blackett always arranged for me to meet him. He seemed to like me, and, well, I certainly liked him. I mean, after all, I was very, very, very many years as junior. And story is too complicated to tell in detail, but as the price of this went up and up, DSIR could not find all the money. It's only in recent years that I've realised that I asked DSIR for £250,000 to build this telescope, and that was more money than they had at their disposal in a whole year for supporting scientific research. I mean, extraordinary to think how small the funds were for scientific research then. When Tizard heard about this, and I have only just discovered who it was. I wrote a few months ago to the Nuffield Foundation, who looked up the archives for me. It was Tizard who wrote to the chap who was then the director of the Nuffield Foundation with the suggestion that the Nuffield Foundation might find half of the money to share with DSR in making this telescope. So I Tizard used to treat me as though I was one of his own children. I assembled all the dates. He had been invited to open the new Henry Simon Research Laboratories in 1950, this would be. And Blackett had said to me, do you mind taking Tizard back to Jodrell, where we just had the traders, and then take him to Crewe to put him on the train? And on the way out, Tizard just talked to me as though I was his child and said, we're doing our best for you, but you mustn't be too disappointed if we can't find the money. And the next day, he wrote from this immensely powerful position and asked the Nuffield Foundation, of which he was one of their co-trustees or something, if they would help share in this telescope, and they did so. So I have most potent and happy and favourable memories of Tizard.